Welcome to another episode of The Caving Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Pelser. I'm a member of the Central Indiana Grotto of the National Speleological Society. And I decided to start this podcast because I was surprised that there was not a podcast devoted to caving. Caving, what is caving? If you're just stumbling upon us, caving is an activity where you enter caves and explore them. And you can either do this as a recreational activity with the proper safety precautions, of course, or you can do this as a frontiersman, I guess, as an explorer, as someone who surveys and maps caves. You can also do it for scientific research. There are a number of reasons why people would want to enter caves. Me, I do it for the fun of it and the thrill and the curiosity. I just love to do it. I've not gotten particularly serious with surveying or mapping or anything, but it's on my list. I would love to do it. And if you are curious about caving, check in with a local grotto, which is kind of a local division of the National Speleological Society. In Indiana, we have like 7 grottos. And I belong, as I said, to the Central Indiana Grotto. And the chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto, Joe Kinder, is our guest this month. Joe has been a lot of places. He grew up in an area where there are a ton of caves. His dad lived in the Garrison Chapel Valley, just southwest of Bloomington, Indiana. And we talk a little bit about that, and about how his dad's opinion of cavers used to be not so good until his son became one. Joe was also a tour guide at a really prominent show cave in Indiana called Blue Spring Caverns, which is a boat tour cave, a really cool place. And so we talk about that, and we talk about further exploration in Blue Spring Caverns. We talk about a trip down to Ellison's, which was a great trip that he went on. And we had a lot of fun. I had a great time talking to Joe. I will say, though, that we got a little emotional at one point, and we talked about a dear caver friend of ours who passed away on a cave trip a couple of years ago. And I just want to warn you that we're going to get to that, and it gets heavy. But what the team who is currently pushing this cave that he passed away in did to honor him is really something special. So you'll want to hear about that. Let's see. What else? Oh, Tag Fall Cave-In is coming up October 6th through the 9th. I will not be there. I've only ever been to one Tag Fall Cave-In. I can't seem to keep my schedule clear for caving events, but I'm going to try to be better about it next year and in years to come. If you're going to go to Tag Fall Cave-In, I wish I could be there to hang out with you. Maybe someday I'll make it back down to Tag Fall Cave-In. Maybe next year. I don't know. So without further ado, let's talk with Joe Kinder. Mr. Joe Kinder. Well, how's it going?
It is going. Thank you, Matt, for having me, and I'm always down to talk caves. So
I've found that in talking with you.
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing. Now, you actually grew up in the Garrison Chapel Valley, right?
Yeah. So when I was young, my parents divorced, and my dad actually moved to Garrison Chapel Road, which was, you know, literally right up from Salamander Cave. So growing up, he had a negative opinion of cavers. So we'd be driving up the road, he'd see a guy walking down with cave gear, and he'd say, effing cavers. You know? So growing up, being young, I had this thought process of people going into caves, but boy, did that change.
So we got to explain, Garrison Chapel Valley is an area just west of Bloomington that is just littered with caves.
Yeah, it's honeycombed with caves, and you're exactly right. It's west side of Bloomington is, you know, caves everywhere, and where I grew up and would spend my weekends.
And big caves, too. I mean, multiple mile-long caves.
Multiple caves, horizontal, vertical. It's really the mecca for Indiana caving.
So when you moved to Garrison Chapel Road, you were about how old?
I was 2, 3, so I'd visit on the weekends, and go on horseback rides with my dad, and he'd take me up to Coon's Cave when I was 6, 7. So
did
really,
you go in?
Never went in. Just went past, saw the entrance, and you know, a sign with bats, and very intrigued at that point. And so that was kind of early youth, you know, experience to an entrance of a cave.
So when was the first time you went into a cave?
First time I went into a cave was at Spring Mill State Park. We'd have family reunions, and I would just wander into Donaldson, so really no organized trip. And then my sister's ex-boyfriend took me into Donaldson a little bit deeper.
To kind of do that trip that you're allowed to do when you go to Spring Mill State Park, which is a park, by the way, near Mitchell, Indiana.
That is correct.
Birthplace of Gus Grissom.
Yes.
And there's multiple caves around there, and Donaldson is just this big, giant, classic cave entrance kind of a looking thing.
Yes, it is. It's a big spring cave, so a lot of water, cave river flowing out, and really beautiful, really cold water. So I didn't explore much then. Really wasn't until later till I started getting into recreational caving.
So when was that? When did you start? When did you like go on your first caving trip?
When I was 14, my grandfather, he was a general practitioner in Lawrence County. He was the county coroner for 50 years. So everybody knew who my grandfather was. And one of his patients was Jim Richards, part owner of Blue Spring Caverns, also located south side of Bedford, in between Bedford and Mitchell. So he took me there when I was 14. I interviewed for a job, got hired as a tour guide, and started on the weekends to Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, doing wild tours, overnight adventures. And some of the old guides took me under their wing and took me into Blue Spring Caverns, and it's a 21-mile...
It's one of the longest systems in Indiana.
It is, yeah.
And you just... And that was kind of how you got started.
That's how I got started. So, you know, 23 years ago... It was really a great thing. You know, most people had jobs like Subway or McDonald's.
Yeah.
And here I was a tour guide in a cave. And so very unique, and just being exposed to such a beautiful cave at a, you know, a time when I needed a good job and a good direction, it really kind of started the wheels of my cave career.
Did you get any weird questions that you either weren't able to answer or didn't want to answer because it was a dumb question?
Every tour.
any you recall?
Well, how many miles of cave are above ground? That'd be one. You know, I don't know.
How much of this cave hasn't been explored?
Exactly.
That kind of thing?
Yep. Get that all the time. So that was always fun. You know, I'm a people person, and so I loved being able to interact with the public. And then just some of my best friends, even to this day, worked at that cave as guides, and we are still close, and I'm still in touch with the owner of Blue Spring, and get special privileges just from being a caver and a past employee, so that's been a great relationship there.
Did you ever have to deal with people freaking out while you were down on the boat? Because Blue Spring it's a boat tour.
Yeah, it's a boat tour, and you definitely get all kinds. Even though you're in a boat on a river, holds 18 people, where you'd think it's open enough where people wouldn't really get freaked out, but usually it's that walk down to the boats, and then when you start to load people on the boat, that's when it kind of hits in, like, okay, do I want to get on a boat and go a mile and a quarter round trip boat ride? And so usually at that point they'd have the option to hike back out.
Yeah, because
so.
It is kind of an intimate. I mean, it's a former pond, and it turned into a huge sinkhole, and it's a steep walk down there. It's kind of foreboding to someone who's not used to that sort of thing.
It really is. And just to tell you a little bit about the history and kind of something I'd learned just over the past few years, you know, Blue Spring has multiple entrances. The one that's commercialized, where tours are operated out of, is called the Coal Glazer entrance, and it was a sinkhole pond that the bottom collapsed in 1940, and George Coalglazer and Eva, his wife, were the owners, and so he came out to the fields to see if the, you know, check on his livestock, and he noticed, my pond's gone. And so, you know, his kids and all the relatives were super interested, so some of those young kids were some of the first to explore and really go down to where the boats were on the river in that area. But just recently I found out that my grandfather, his mother and father was so Eva Kohlglaser, which was George Kohlglaser's wife, she had a sister, which was Iva Hall. Iva Hall married Ollie Kinder. So my great, great aunt and uncle were the original owners of Blue Spring.
And you didn't find that out until later?
2-3 years ago.
What? Two, three years ago from now?
I worked as a guide and I managed the cave. You know, I worked on and off for 8 years down there.
Oh,
and
my
I talked about George and Eva Kohlglaser every day of my damn life. Never realized that, you know, I'm pretty much attached to this place.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So that was great news.
Wow. Does that entitle you to anything? I'm just kidding.
No, it does not entitle me to any ownership, which right. would be nice. But I think that still gives me a little more, you know, bargaining to be able to always access the cave. So that's what I'm going for.
And that's true, right? Yes. You go there a lot.
Yes. So, you know, it's a 21-mile cave system. 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, four of us dug open another entrance. It was a known entrance. And I had the idea, you know, I want to do project work in Blue Spring because you start out as a recreational caver and there's so many different avenues you could go. There's photography, there's, you know, which I've taken an interest in. There's surveying, mapping, you know, really, you could do cave rescue work, whatever direction you go. And as you progress, you just find different things that interest you. And project caving has become one of my main interests and goals as a caver now. And Blue Spring has a lot of potential. It's like I said, 21-mile system, but that was a lot of efforts done in the late 60s, 70s, and early 80s. And since then, there really hasn't been any project work. So, you know, my goal was to develop, you know, continue my rapport efforts with the landowners and gain access to multiple entrances so that way I could work in certain sections of the cave to try and extend the mileage. And to this point, I've had little success in this cave, but it's not over. The cave's always there. I've got little projects everywhere, and it's really just trying to drag people away from other projects to get going in this one. And so I've been successful a little bit here or there, but... But yeah, the entrance we dug open, I've got two canoes bolted to the walls inside the cave.
Because it's a river cave, I mean.
It's a river cave. It's canoeable for 2.5 miles, which is really rare. There's not many river caves. There's only one other cave in Tennessee I can think of where you could get on a canoe and travel for 2.5 miles. So that was nice to get a couple canoes in there and gave us an opportunity to access the upstream portions where the majority of the cave is. And so whether it's recreationally or photography or doing project work, that's my interest moving forward at Blue Spring.
So any leads that you want to go back and look at? I mean, how long has it been known to be a 21-mile cave?
Pretty much Art and Peg Palmer were... Art Palmer was a cartographer and hydrologist, you know, did his... got his degree at Indiana University, and while he was there, he had a local cave club back in the 60s, early 70s, Geolucificus is what they were called. And so really a hardcore group and the pioneers of our, you know, of us cavers because they had limited resources. They were dealing with a very wet cave in Blue Spring, and that's kind of also anybody that caves at Blue Spring, you just develop a certain amount of toughness because the amount of water you have to go through, you really are either turned off by caving or just, you know, develops this sort of toughness. And so Blue Springs kind of brought a lot of tough cavers through its cave throughout the years. And really, you know, 21 miles is pretty much where it stands right now. And that's been since the late 80s that there's been anything really significant added.
Mm. Multiple levels, perhaps?
Not a whole lot.
Not that kind of rock?
Not that kind of rock, and it's, but huge passage. So any of the areas, the thing I love about Blue Spring is the hydrology. You go in there, and wherever you are, there is some upper levels where it's drier, and that's areas that's already formed, and the water tables move down to where it's flowing now and active, and you're in these corridors, these rooms that, you know, some are 50, 60 feet tall by 100, 150 feet wide by a couple hundred feet long. So they're really huge rooms. Other than Wyandotte and now Binkley, you know, they're some of the bigger rooms in Indiana.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a pretty special place.
It really is. Yep.
So what is the longest cave trip you've ever taken in terms of hours or perhaps days?
I took a cave trip into Binkley Cave. That's a project we've been working on for quite a while. I entered the game maybe 3 years ago, and to that point there had already been a significant amount of caves surveyed. And when I started working with them, we continued the efforts in a particular section. And one trip was 26 hours, I think.
Yeah.
That's probably been my longest cave trip.
That is a long trip.
Yeah. It's 26 straight, so no base camp somewhere and then rest. But it was 26 straight because you're...
And that's a cave with a lot of grim crawls. Did you have to do a lot of those on that trip?
Yes. So this section, there's been a couple of known caves that connected together that connected into Binkley. So it's like you start off in one cave and you do a half a mile crawling one way on the way in. And you drop through all these squeezes and tunnels and areas that's been blasted and get to a spot where you drop down and there's been a ladder placed there. And that was the missing link between, you know, Miller Cave and then Blowing Hole. So you drop down 7-8 feet into Blowing Hole, a river cave that's active. And you go a little ways, a mile or so, before you get to some really wet stuff. And you drop in to Binkley Cave, and you get going through bathtubs. You know, one bathtub is 2,000 feet long. And
wow.
50 feet of it is an eye dipper, basically.
Oh, my God.
And I tell people about that, and that's, you know, part of that 26-hour trip. You have to go through, you know, half a mile crawling one way, 2,000-foot bathtub where the best it gets is just your head above the water, and you're swimming through.
That's at the best.
That's at the best.
The best. Wow. And
you crawl, and you get to a gravel mud bank that you crawl to, so you're pushing along, and you hit this mud bank, and you have to drag your body over it and get back in the water. You go another 100 feet to the next one, so it's pretty rough.
That sounds miserable.
It is.
But I'd love to do it.
It's a beautiful cave, and those efforts led to, you know, huge discoveries a couple years ago. One of the largest rooms in a cave in the state was discovered on my first trip in there.
Really?
It was quite amazing. You know, you do that half-mile crawl, the 2,000-foot bathtub, and then you go through a couple miles of suck mud where, you know, knee-deep mud and waist-deep to chest-deep water.
Wow.
So it's easier to just lay on your Swago pack and swim. And then when your arms get burnt out, then you go back to your feet, and then your feet get burnt out and your legs, and go back to swimming.
Bring water wings.
Water wings, arm floaties, whatever you got.
Noodles.
Yeah. But it led to some big cave, and, you know, it's a currently a 43-mile cave system. And
longest in Indiana by far.
By far. Seventh longest in the country, and soon to be hopefully sixth. It's hopefully going to pass a cave in West Virginia to take over the sixth longest in the country.
Wow. And the key is the constant work that's been done by people like Dave Everton and by Tony and Marion Akers.
Yep.
They're currently leading it, right?
Rand Hazlett is the main contributor. Dave Everton was the one that spearheaded the efforts in 2008, 2009, and really the past couple of years. He's kind of dropped off and
he made the Blowing Hole connection.
He did make the Blowing Hole connection.
He surpassed the 40-mile mark, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's just done it all in there.
Yeah. Well, 22 miles to 40 in a matter of 5 years. It's pretty amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is something.
Yep.
Wow. So that was your longest cave trip.
Yes.
What would you say, looking back on all the cave trips, was your favorite cave trip, if you could pick one, if you could possibly pick one?
I did a trip a couple of years ago that was really special, and it was a culmination of some of my favorite people, cavers I look up to, people that are way more skilled than I am. It was in Ellison's Cave in Pigeon Mountain, Georgia, and it's sort of the mecca of vertical caving in our country. And, you know, I wasn't able to do any project work in the cave, but I've been to this cave on 7-8 different occasions, and it's a 14-mile system with two, you know, horizontal cave and two of the largest vertical drops in the continental United States. The first one is a fantastic pit at 586 feet deep, and the second one is an incredible pit at 440 feet deep. And, you know, we always had the idea of doing a through trip, and it's been done several times, but not with my group of friends. And so we, you know,
Do you feel like dropping names?
Sure.
That anyone might know?
Yeah. You know, Elliot Stahl,
oh, yeah.
Ron Adams was with, Greg McNamara, Tony, Marion Akers, Rand Hazlett, Dave Stahl was with, just a really good
group.
That is
a who's who. That is fantastic.
Yeah, it really was. And
no one's going to lag on that group.
No. we had a great time. And, you know, these are all the people that I look up to and look to for you know, answers to my questions, and just a great group, super competent. And it's a long trip, and I think it was a 14-15 hour, but it's a different type of you know, cave trip, where not only is it physical for me, but it's also mentally tiring, because you're dealing with a lot of exposure, you're dealing with a lot of open climbing, and, you know, well over 1,200-1,300 feet of vertical extent of climbing that you have to do, rappelling,
wow,
or climbing in a through trip. And so I would say that ranks right up there with one of my favorite trips.
How long were you in there?
That, yeah, 14 to 15, 16 hours. I
wow.
can't remember. But it takes a lot.
You go in on the fantastic side?
Yeah, so we actually...
did you do the thing where you crossed over?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So I did a trip like that 5 years ago with a group, three or four years ago with a group, and we had one team enter the mountain on one side and another team entered the other, and you rig all these different drops and then the two main pits, and then you pass each other and climb out each other's gear and de-rig everything and meet back at the base of the mountain. So that's a really fun trip, and our group... With this one, we rigged a little bit earlier, had one side of the mountain pre-rigged, hiked back over to the other one, and entered one side, the fantastic side, and then, we entered the incredible side and then went out the fantastic side, and just awesome.
What a climb that has to be, fantastic pit. I mean, how long does it take you to do it?
I'd say at my best time, 35 minutes. Which is
35 minutes?
That's not a really good time. There's some people, the Elliot Stahls, the, you know, super skinny guys of the world are climbing it in 10
yeah.
or 15. But me, you know, I'm a pretty big guy. And so
I feel like it took me that long to climb out of Conley Hole. I mean, I don't know.
It
took a long time.
Yeah. And I've climbed it with worse times. But, you know, there's different climbing styles and methods. And, you know, if you're a skinnier guy, it's to your advantage in the vertical game. You're not fighting the gravity as much. And with me, I'm throughout my caving career, 200 to 250 now, you know, in 23 years. So you kind of evolve.
Yeah. Do you ever freak out when you're that high off the ground? I mean, Fantastic Pit is essentially it's the Washington Monument plus 30 feet. I mean, does that ever get to you? Does that ever bother you when you get real high off the ground?
Yeah, I think the last time, actually that trip, when we were initially rigging the drops, and even my wife is like, "You're going back to Ellison's again? You have nothing to prove there." And I'm like,
you already went from one side to the other. Both pits. What are you thinking?
I know. Well, and I'd been there multiple times, but it's just something where you have to get up for. And it's one of those caves where you've got to be on your A game with all your equipment and be physical enough and mentally and physically tough to do it. And it's not one for someone that's a novice or, you know, even to get through the mountain, the route, I don't know the route, so I have to be guided. And guys like Elliot, John Manish, another guy in tag, I've went with multiple times. You know, these guys have taken the time to learn the route through the mountain. And when you're with someone like that, you gain a level of confidence. So whether I'm leading a cave trip or I'm with a cave trip leader, and I like going with somebody that I'm confident in, that is going to be a team player and help everybody in the group. You have your strongest members and your weakest, aka me sometimes. But I like going with guys that are my friends, have got my back. And on that trip, it was amazing. So nothing to worry about on that one in particular.
That must have been a great time. Do you have a least favorite cave trip? When I came out of Wayne Cave the first time I ever went there, I said, I'm never going back. I've been back twice. But has there ever been one that made you say that, whether you went back to it or not?
I have no interest in going back to Popcorn Spring Cave.
Where is that?
It's in the town of Popcorn. Just if you keep going a little bit past Sullivan Cave near Springville, Indiana, come to a little town, Popcorn, and there's a cave that sits up in the hillside that, you know, it may not be everyone's hell, but it kind of was mine. It's Popcorn is kind of the way the rock forms. It sticks to your clothes. It can rip your clothes. So it's
real jagged and just
jagged, yeah.
Pointy, and it's awful.
It's tough on the on your gear and clothing and whatnot. And so, you know, in there it's super tight. A lot of really S-turn bends where you're kind of stuck. And you know, I've always been a bigger guy, and so going through a crawl where, you know, you kind of enter the cave and you start descending down with a series of free climbs. You get down to the lowest level at that point, and you're walking in this big 20-foot tall, 20-foot wide passage. And it looks like it keeps going, but over on the left wall, there's this little bitty crack where you have to get on your side and you start in. And it's like, it's a couple hundred feet of super tight S-turn canyons. You know, if there was something on the other side that was really wonderful, I would go through it again.
But there's not.
There's not.
Oh,
so,
man.
That's probably one of the ones I'd like to steer clear of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, this is such a lame question, but do you have a favorite cave that you'll never get tired of, you always like to go back to?
Hey, Blue Spring Caverns. That's where I got my start. I could always go there. There's so much that I want to do in there, and I don't devote enough time like I want to. It needs it. You know, so that
can
cave,
you point out on the map where you think, ah, oh, that's got some potential. That's got some potential.
Well, definitely, you know, just going off of, NDOT has die trace records. So Highway 37 was being rebuilt. They had to do a lot of die tracing based on permitting. And so bugs you basically inject a die into a surface stream, and it works its way underground. And you place like a filter or a bug in certain locations. And so where that die ends up, you can gain a certain amount of percentage of where the water on the surface is going. And so Blue Spring, that system to the south, it has a lot of drainage, and die tracing all the way into Mitchell has been showing up in Blue Spring.
Wow.
And so that's 5 miles due south, and it's a 21-mile system, and, you know, it easily could be a 50-mile cave system with a lot of work. But it's
absolutely,
I think it's got that potential there. You know, another cave that comes to mind in Tennessee is Cumberland Caverns. I used to go there as a guide with Blue Spring. I still go back there now. I periodically go to Bluegrass Underground. It's a commercial cave that turned one of their larger rooms into a venue where some of the largest bluegrass musicians play.
That's a terrific idea.
If I owned Blue Spring, it would be a mini Bluegrass Underground. I think it's a great way to bring the public into that place. And
We've got to make sure that we explain that this is Blue Spring Caverns in Indiana and not Blue Spring Cave, in Tennessee.
That's very correct. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So, any caving accomplishments that that you're particularly proud of that you either you were there when it happened or you were directly responsible?
Sure. I think the finding the McLean Mountain Room and Binkley Cave was definitely one of my best cave trips, just because it was one of the most significant finds of any room in a cave in the state. And, you know, it led to a lot more interest. I was able to do a photo trip and get some photos in this room that got some good, local recognition. Just going to a place where no one else has ever been, where can you do that? You know, there's the deep oceans and there's caves.
And to have it be as big as the McLean Mountain Room is.
Yeah, and be in southern Indiana. You know, you can go places in southern Indiana where no one's ever been, and that was one of them. And, you know, to get to that room is, 7 hours one way of pretty hard caving, really hard caving. And, you get to that point and even beyond that, it's an 11,000-foot river that is pushing the most water in the whole cave. We crossed a drainage divide and found this river. We found multiple huge rotunda rooms, the McLean Mountain Room being one. And we named it the McLean Mountain Room because of a dear friend that lost his life in the cave a couple years before that, Tim McLean, and a great guy, super huge big part of the Binkley Cave group, the ISS, Indiana Speleological Society Cavers. They really are the main foundation of this project, and he was one of them, and for him to pass was tough. So it gave us an opportunity to, always let his name be remembered by giving him that room as his name's behind it. So it's a really good thing. So that was great, and we did more trips in there. I did, I think, 6 trips in 1 year, and the least amount was 17 hours. Mm. And so, and I've been on all the trips back there.
The least amount was 17 hours.
Yeah. And so I've been on 7 trips back there. I'm the only one to do all 7 trips.
Wow.
And, so that's kind of, I like to hang my hat on that. And we, it's the same deal where it's a 40-plus mile cave system, and based on injecting dyes, 5 miles to the due west is where this cave emerges. And right now it's like this small footprint of 40 miles. And then you look at 5 miles due west, this is a 100-mile cave system. It's like Mammoth Cave, to the north. And so this will be a project going into the next generation of cavers and beyond. But it's good to have a good part in that one. So
yeah. Boy, that's something. I mean, you think about the work that was, speaking of Mammoth Cave, you think about all the work that was done down there and all, back then, and all the work that's being done up here in Indiana now. I mean, it really is an exciting time if you're an Indiana caver. And if you're not an Indiana caver, come visit.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot going on here, and there's a lot going on in every state. Kentucky still has a lot of great caving to do, and there's great groups of cavers there, and TAG, where Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia converge. There's a lot of great project cavers out there, and so to be in the technology era where you can instantly take photos and put them on social media and people to give you props for the project work you're doing, you kind of feed off that, so that's kind of fun too.
What would you say caving does for you? Like, why do you cave?
I cave because it's a safe place. I feel like the surface...
I think a lot of non-cavers would disagree with you in saying that. It's a safe place. There's so many people who are terrified of doing this and can't believe when you tell them that you do this, that you do that, but you just said it's a safe place. Why do you think that?
It's let me rephrase that.
but I understand what you mean, though.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that same way.
I just get tired of the surface. I get tired of the day-to-day grind, the dealing with people, you just see a lot of ugliness, and all I see is beautiful things when I go underground. I get an opportunity. I'm not a religious person. I kind of feel like I get my Zen or my church when I go underground. It's my time to, get inside of my own mind and reconnect, and I just feel like loved by the earth, you know. So that's kind of why I've always gotten that feeling, and I guess when that stops, and maybe I'll stop, but it won't. It's sort of, it's in my DNA.
Yeah, it's like a church. It's like a church. That, I mean, especially when you find something like the McLean Mountain Room. I mean, that must have, I mean, you spent some time taking pictures in there, but when you first walked in, I mean, how long did it take for that high to come down? It probably didn't.
It really didn't for, you know, especially when you're on the trip and you're dealing with the grind of it. We knew once we found this room, we're getting to the point of our limits, you know, because each, you don't know what to prepare for on those trips. It just keeps going and going, and really anything over 24 hours straight up, I feel like is, you know, that's a tiring trip no matter what you're doing. And so once we got out of the cave and just the buzz and the excitement and seeing all these leads that you're just walking by, and they're great looking, you know, leads in the cave where it's all virgin. It's all what we call booty, where, you know, it does get addictive. You don't walk into a McLean Mountain Room every day on a recreational trip. And to be the first people to walk in there and find it was just it was special. So, you know, you feed off of that. And that's what led into six more trips in a year. And, you know, 3 miles of virgin cave.
Yeah. So you find something like that, it's hard to put it down.
It really is. Yeah.
Is there anything about caving that you don't particularly like?
Yeah, there's definitely low airspace bathtubs, which I'm known to be a wet caver because of blue spray.
But there's nothing you've really sworn off, like I'm never doing anything like that again.
Scuba diving, I haven't gone there, so okay, yeah. I don't think I will go that route.
I understand that.
Based on the expense alone, you know, my wife tolerates what I do now, so that would be just more of an expense that I would want to take on. But, you know, I just try and find where I fit in, and there's a lot of guys that move faster than me in caves. They're more technical than I am. So I just try and pair up with people I'm comfortable with, and if I feel like I can fit, you know, then I'm in. But I always have that anxiety. I'm usually the biggest guy in the group, and I don't really want to slow people down. I want to contribute, and so sometimes on trips that gets the better of me, where I'm anxious about, okay, when I get, you know, if I know the cave, I know what to deal with. But if I don't know where I've been, or I don't have as much info as I'd like, then that makes me a little nervous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you say you're a big guy, but you're just barrel chested but you got the gams, you got the power, you're able to keep up.
I grind through it. And I've been known to be a pretty strong, hard caver and do some stuff where other people are like, I would not want to do what you did. And I look at what they do and I think, man, you know, what I did is nothing compared to what you're doing, but it's just sort of the mental thing. I'm accustomed to water. So getting in wetsuits and staying in them and being in a wet cave doesn't bother me, where some people get cold really, you know, quickly. They don't have the meat or the fat on them that I do, or the insulation. And so there's advantages and disadvantages for
absolutely
everyone going into each cave. So some caves suit me and some do not.
What would you say is the most miserable you've ever been in a cave passage? And what cave was it, and when did it happen?
Well, when Tim McLean passed away and Blowing Hole Cave, I'd never been in that cave, and I was the
Were
first.
Were you on that trip?
I was in my, I hunt, I'm a deer hunter, and I was in my deer stand, and I got a text or an email from someone on Cave Rescue reaching out, needing people to volunteer to help. And so I instantly had all my stuff together, which is odd, but I, you know, went to my vehicle, loaded up my stuff, waved goodbye to my wife and said, there's a rescue on a cave trip where I was supposed to be on that cave trip today, but I decided to go hunting. So I, you know, get down there and I'm calling everybody and trying to find out. And, you know, I'd heard that Tim McClain had a heart attack, and that you know, they didn't know if it was a rescue or recovery at this point, but they need cavers. They don't have anybody. And so I got down there, and I was, you know, really on the second team to go into the cave. So one team was going back to help bring the some of the group that was on that trip where Tim had a heart attack. And there were some other folks laying down a TCOM line to try and get communications to the outside. And there was a DNR or a conservation officer a tent set up, and so they were kind of controlling things with Cave Rescue. And so they asked, you know, who can go in right now? So I, you know, raised my hand, said I can. And, you know, I don't have the experience caving with Tim McClain like a lot of people do, but I had caved with him and have known him for a long time. And, you know, at that point we had heard it was a recovery, and so that was just, you know, it was heart-wrenching to know that a dear friend lost his life and you're going in there to help get him out. But I was extremely proud to do so, but I don't really want to do that again. You know, I feel like I've been in other physical, tough caves, obviously, but this cave was a river cave. It was cold. It was November. It was really cold in November. And, it was tough to deal with. Everybody was super emotional and sorry to be kind of a downer, but that was really something that I think would probably rank as my worst cave trip, yeah, just from that standpoint.
I mean, it's one thing to be on a recovery. It's another thing for it to be your friend,
yeah,
someone that you knew.
Yep.
Yeah. I imagine that'd be terrible.
It was terrible. And
that's not an easy cave. I mean, it's like, it's one thing if you're walking in and walking out, but this is
2 miles.
Wow. He was 2 miles in.
Yeah. 2 miles. And really so you're in a waist to chest deep stream, mm-hmm, for a good mile of it.
And this is a cave that in the wintertime, I mean, it's called Blowing Hole because it's connected to a massive system, the Binkley system.
Yes.
And so it will blow and suck air. And so in the wintertime, that river will freeze.
Freeze.
It will freeze.
Yes.
So in November, it had to have been
it was
terribly
frigid.
Cold.
I think it was 10 or 15 degrees outside or 20. I can't remember exactly. It felt really cold, and just all the air blowing through the cave. Like you were saying, there's some freezing there, and you have to do a bathtub on your way in where you're just your head above the water. But, you know, there was a lot of great people that offered up their time, came down, they, you know, we all worked together as a team and got him out. And I think that's what he would have wanted, was a good teamwork like that. And everyone was as respectful as we all could be. And, you know, so, yeah, that ranks up there as something I don't want to do ever, yeah, again, or hopefully.
Yeah. But I bet it feels nice to have at least been part of it because it was necessary.
It was necessary, and it brought a lot of people together, and it really, you learn a lot from an experience like that. And a lot of people that were involved in that project kind of took a back seat for a little while, just, I think, emotionally and mentally.
Yeah, how couldn't you? Yeah,
exactly. And especially a lot of folks that were spent a lot more time with Tim than I did, that shared a lot of great times in that cave. But for him to pass away there, you know, I think, in my opinion, it's a good death. And he did it justice while he was alive. And but yeah, it brought a lot of us together. We learned a lot. So it was a positive, I think, that came out of it. And he got a great, amazing room named after him.
He would be absolutely honored.
Honored. Yes, definitely.
So you are the chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto. Is that a position, a leadership position in a caving club? Is that something that you wanted or something you just felt like you needed to do?
Well, whenever I was nominated, I didn't know whether to say thank you or F you. It was sort of like...
because it's a commitment. You know, you're running the business of this thing, and we put on an event every year. It'd be one thing if we were a grotto that didn't do anything.
Sure.
Except, you know, go on a few cave trips. But we put on a big event every year. It's It's not like you're getting paid to do this.
Not getting paid to do this. And, you know, I came from the BIG, the Bloomington, Indiana Grotto. It's a merry bunch of cavers down there. They're a great band.
Dave Everton among them.
His merry clan of cavers. They're just free spirits. There's really no, you know, there's an agenda, but it's very loose. And so coming up to, you know, my wife and I moved to Indianapolis last year, but lived in southern Johnson County. And so I would drive up and I worked up here in Indianapolis, Carmel area. And so I would go to the CIG meetings. And, you know, so really I've been a member for, I think, coming on 4 years now. And I just meshed well with all the people there. I love the history. You know, there's 60 plus years of cavers there that were the original cavers, and, mm-hmm. and the Tom Rays and Bob Van Dievenders and a lot of people that I have a great deal of respect for. And, you know, I came into it looking up to Ron Adams, and at the time Dean Wiseman was the chairman. And I've done a lot of great trips with him with, you know, Bridge Day events and Whiteside Mountain. And so it was just a good mix of cavers and people I looked up to. And instantly, I think, because I think I have the gift of gab a little bit.
You hold a meeting together.
Yeah, I try to. And I just like to have fun. That was kind of what I felt like people were missing. You know, if there were any complaints, which there wasn't a whole lot, just that, you know, hey, you know, you seem like to have a good time, and I like to have a good time, and so that was kind of the mentality I wanted to bring, and people just kind of nominated me to start as a vice chairman, and that's really a role where you interact with all the members, and you welcome new members, and so I did that role for a year, and then I got voted to be the chairman, very honored to do that, but it is a time commitment. I've got a wife and two young kids, and my wife is so great about letting me go to church, shall I say, and I kind of treat it like that, where it's where I get my pleasure, and it's a good part of my life, and so she's good about letting me do the CIG meetings and go caving, but yeah, the CIG's great. It's gotten gave me an opportunity to meet great people like yourself, and an opportunity to lead. I like to be a leader, and I think we've had a great time over the past couple of years, and I look to serve the CIG as long as I can. It's a great, great group.
We should also say that you are you sell Highline rope.
I do.
you took me 250 feet coming over here today.
That's
which
right.
Which I thank you very much for.
No problem. Highline Rope is a manufacturer of static line caving rope, and I've been a distributor for them the past 2 years. And it's got some perks. I get a reduced rate on the rope, so I'm basically getting some free rope, and that's it's been great. It's a good rope, and I support Andy up there at Highline.
Danger is his name, right?
Andy Danger is his nickname. And so getting rope from a guy named Danger, sometimes people might throw a red flag, but hey, I don't see a list of dead bodies laying at the bottom of Highline rope. There's it's solid stuff. I put my life on it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I think one time Andy was passing through Indianapolis, and somebody told me that I think it was Dean, said that he was coming through. And at the time, I wanted to buy the rope, which I ended up buying from you today. And he was just a hoot to try to deal with over email and text and stuff.
Yeah, he's a character.
He was passing through. He probably just didn't have time to stop and hook me up or anything like that. But he was super nice and attentive. And he sells a hell of a product.
He does sell a hell of a product, and it's a good price. And you know, I've kind of been helping my friends here in Indiana, where if you need something quick, if you need rope, and you know it's not as accessible, then it's here. So, not trying to make a great deal of profit or anything, just more or less something to pass along to my friends and whoever needs it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about the ropes in your quiver, as it were, and think about which ones need to be retired, and then give Joe a call.
Exactly. Yes. Always willing to help out.
So have you, I don't want to go down a dark road here, but have you ever been injured in a cave?
Yes and no. Nothing where I was hospitalized. It was all self-rescue type scenarios. But I think the worst to date in Blue Spring Caverns, there's certain sections, and it was discovered, certain discoveries were named the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth discoveries. No real great names behind them, but in order of operation. And so taking a trip into the third discovery, one of the best areas of the cave, a room called the Pyramid Room. And I had led a group back there. It was a photo trip, so I wanted to photo document the room. Had a great time. It's a tough trip. You go through the maze, an area of 7,000 feet of interconnected passage, and it's you come into a spot called Five Points, where five passages converge into one. So a lot of people don't really know their way or are confident to find their way through it. And you get in there, and you get southbound going passage to the Pyramid Room. And it's the best room in the whole cave. And so I had a great time, took photos. And on the way back, great time with friends, no issues. We get, you have to canoe into the cave. And where you take off by foot, you park the canoe and you really climb up this mud bank. And it's 15-foot climb. And that's what takes you into this whole maze section of Blue Spring Caverns. And so we get back to the canoe. I had just done a 5-6 hour cave trip, feeling good, and one mud bank. And so I slipped and my feet went above my head. I landed on my back and started going down this mud bank full speed.
Oh God.
And there was only a 6-inch stalagmite sticking out of the mud bank. I went up and over that at full speed. I screamed. Everyone thought I broke my leg, but no.
You didn't.
I didn't.
Okay.
I bruised my bunghole.
No.
It was horrible.
You got buggered.
My buddy Elza yelled down, "Joe, are you all right? Did you break your leg?" No.
No.
It
was worse.
It was the most painful experience. I could barely walk. I could barely, it was horrible. Oh. And it generated a lot of laughter from everyone else once they figured out what had happened. My wife took amazing photos of it. And painful. It's something I usually don't bring up unless I'm on a podcast. So I figured, what the hell?
Yeah, why not? Oh my gosh, that is a hell of an injury. I've been buggered by a cave, but not like that. I think every caver has in one form or another. But there should be an award for that.
Well, 220-230 pounds at that time. There was no stopping me, especially not a 5-6 inch stalagmite. As fast as you can go down a mud bank and up and over that thing, it changed things.
So how far, you probably got going pretty quick. What was like the grade? But was it really steep?
Oh, 2-1.
Oh, wow. That's steep.
Yeah, it was brutal.
So where did you land? Did you land on hard ground or did you land in the water?
In the river.
Okay, you landed in the river. At least there was that.
Yeah, so the rock and river, though. It was kind of like... I never intended to slide down this mud bank.
Right.
It was going to be a gradual descent. And it failed miserably. And it was great. 5-6 of my closest friends saw it. And so, yeah, I still hear about that a little bit.
Well, Joe Kinder, chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto of the National Speleological Society, thank you for being my guest on episode 3 of the Caving Podcast.
Matt, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, I love talking to Joe, whether we're in front of microphones or not. He is just a hoot. And I really want to talk to you or your caving buddies. I really want to get a good, diverse group on this podcast. This is a monthly podcast. I don't really have the time to put this out weekly, but I am devoted to putting the Caving Podcast out once a month at the beginning of the month. So look for another episode at the beginning of October. I don't know who it's going to be yet, but it's going to be somebody good. We've got a lot of great cavers in Indiana that a lot of people have heard of. And so I'm going to try to stick to an elite list But there are a lot of people who aren't from Indiana whose names I've read in books and trip reports. I really want to talk to. So if you know of someone who might be able to spare an hour and talk to me about caving, let me know. You can send me an email at alpineproductions@gmail.com. That's my personal email address, alpineproductions@gmail.com. Let me know, and I would love to be in touch with some national cavers on a national level. I really, really want to turn this podcast into a cool forum for cavers. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next month. Until then, kill nothing but time.